Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, January 29th. I'm Ray Graff. You know, I've been accused by some of my colleagues of being a little jaded. But I mean, why not? I've been in radio since 1946. Nothing really surprises me. But today I'm surprised because we welcome back an old buddy, Chef Rick Orlando, owner of Richter Scale Brand and Flavor Maker Spices. He joins us today to answer all your cooking and flavoring questions. If you want to talk to Chef Rick Orlando, call early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. None other than Chef Rick Orlando on your cooking calls coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the line, we have Chef Rick Orlando joining us to share some cooking and flavoring tips and tricks. After 25 years cooking upstate, Rick now owns the Richter Scale brand of seasonings and condiments. Flavor Maker spices are the exact seasoning used in his award-winning New World restaurants, and Richter Scale sauces are his special unique blends. Rick's potato latkes beat Bobby Flay on the Food Network. He also won on Chopped twice in the 2013 World Food Championships. His meatless eggplant meatballs won the top prize for the Northeast region. He has also appeared on the Today Show, PBS's Simply Ming, Live from Daryl's House, Home Matters on Discovery. The list is endless. He won Best Chef 5 years or more, I don't know, many years in a row for the Times Union. He's also the author of We Want Clean Food. And Chef Rick Orlando, welcome back. How you doing?
Hey, Ray. It's me, the old blast from the past, huh?
That's really it's really great that you're here. And by the way, if anybody wants to talk to Rick Orlando, the lines will be opening now at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I know that you have been very busy since you got out of the day-in, day-out restaurant world. You got the Instagram. What is the Instagram channel?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, Chef Rick Orlando is YouTube, Instagram, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and then there's one for Flavor Maker Spices. It's endless. It's an endless web of communication, and you know, I'm learning. I was learning about it long before COVID, but right now with so many people having limited outdoor traveling and eating out activity, it really turned into quite a community, quite a way to communicate with people, and I enjoy it. And that's why, you know, we're selling a lot of my products online. We're in a lot of stores, all independent stores, and if you go to rickorlando.com, there's a store locator, so you can support all the local independent businesses that are carrying my products. But it's been really good. I mean, Ray, I left the bistro in early June, and I took about a month and made a raised bed in the yard and did all this stuff. Got a puppy, but then I just kind of, you know, as my father said, don't stop moving.
Right.
He's 86. So I just took this on, and it's been really, really exciting.
Somehow I can't picture you as the aged Vito Corleone in the garden out back, you know, just sitting by the tomatoes.
I have my moments.
It is really great to have you back here, and there's a lot to talk about. Before we get to the phones at 800-348-2551 or the email at voxpopwamc.org, tell me, what is this Richter Scale brand? When did this happen?
Well, you know, in 1993, we opened the original New World home cooking restaurant on Zena Road in Woodstock. And at that point, I think I was probably one of the only restaurants around that was really delving into the world's best spicy food on a menu, like Thai and Caribbean and Indian and South Asian, you know, all the stuff that I love, all that equatorial fun stuff. And, you know, a lot of people didn't know what to expect, and someone said to me once, you should put little chili peppers like they do in the Chinese restaurants to indicate the heat level of certain dishes. And I thought about it, and we decided to create something then called the Richter Scale. So there was a little description on the menu, and the reason why it was the Richter scale, it was the heat level according to me, not according to you. I put a little disclaimer back.
Oh, do we lose Rick? We may have lost Rick. We have, you know, one of the things that has happened during the COVID, which is very annoying, frankly, to somebody who has guests every day, is that we will have guests who are not in the studio. So then we are beholden to technology standing up and keeping going. Otherwise, the show grinds to a big screeching halt. Now, we have a computerized phone system. It's not, you know, it's not perhaps 100% reliable. So here we are. I have no show. I have no guest. I'm going to give you the number. You call. We know we're going to get Rick back. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You know, we got this lockbox here at WAMC, and we're going to try to fill it very quickly, and we're going to give you some numbers next week as to where we are. But if you want to make a pledge, you can go online. That's still up. WAMC.org is the website. You can make your secure online pledge. Hey, maybe a couple extra bucks, we can get a phone system that actually works. Rick Orlando, are you back?
I am here, baby. Yeah, I heard a few beeps. I thought, oh, maybe he's tired of me already. Here I am. Hi.
You know,
I'm back.
We got a long time to go. So where were you when we last spoke?
We were talking about the Richter scale. I believe,
oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so.
Right, so then we were looking for names of the company, and I'm just releasing my first hot sauces in the next week or so, and we have the flavor maker spices, but we needed a corporate name, so we decided to go with the Richter scale, and it's a fun name. And you know, when I say the Richter scale, you think of earth shattering, groundbreaking, earthquakes, and all this great stuff. And that's what my food does.
Fair enough. Now, what sort of condiments are we talking about here?
Well, right now I have two hot sauces on the market. I have a West Indian mustard-based hot sauce that we call Trinidaddy, which is a Trinidad-style mustard sauce, which is not super hot, but really, really delicious. Gotten people to rediscover hot dogs because it's so good. And I'm releasing, right now, we just finished producing in Albany through Vital Eats, which is a little small production company right downtown, my legendary Purple Haze hot sauce.
Oh.
Which was on the menu forever. I'll send you a bottle.
Yeah, man.
And I was going to drop some off today, but I couldn't get up to Albany. But that's pretty much done being produced. It's being labeled this weekend, and I'll be able to have it probably. It's available online now for pre-order, and it should be in stores in a week, maybe a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'm working on barbecue sauces. I'm working on a lot of fun stuff, you know. And the other thing that I'm doing is I'm collaborating with other small makers in our market. I've been collaborating with Field Goods. I don't know if you...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they're one of your big sponsors.
And they've been on here. They've been on the show,
I've done... I did a series of videos for them through the fall, and they're all on my YouTube channel. And then I'm doing soups for them starting next month. And then my great friends from Four Fat Fowl Cheese.
I love their cheese. Love their cheese.
Yeah, well, we just finished doing a tasting. I'm developing kind of offbeat but super delicious toppings for their ricotta, and we're going to start a test market of that. And there's others. There's other little collaborations going on, but those are the two that I'm working on right now.
Well, when you talk to the folks from Four Fat Fowls again, please tell them I said hello. I still wear their shirt very often around the house. So it's and actually, when you put an outer shirt on it, all you see is the word fat. And so several people nod and say, yeah, well, you got that pretty well right. The number.
So you have your shirt open like a little Tony Soprano thing going there.
That's right.
Well, I'm sure Shalina's listening now. Hi, Shalina. Hear what Ray said? He said hello. There you go.
The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Chef Rick Orlando. And we'll take a break here in a moment, and then we'll get to the food questions. But before we do that, now, you were basically in a kitchen, a commercial kitchen, for decades.
Yeah.
And now you're basically an entrepreneur. You're out there and about. You're communicating with the public. Do you ever miss being back in there in the heat of battle?
Well, I take care of that addiction by doing pop-ups. If you go to my website, you'll see I do one pop-up a month at Cafe Capriccio.
Wow.
And they're really fun. I'm doing wine dinners there. And, you know, we do half capacity, so we get about 25 people. And I, you know, working with Jim Rua and Franco Rua, I mean, we've been friends and almost like family for 30 years. When I first left the bistro, I got an email from Jim saying, it's time for what we talked about. And I said, what was that? And he reminded me about 20 years ago, because my business was called New World Home Cooking, he had me do some cooking classes in his little kitchen called Old World Home Cooking. So now I'm doing some cool Italian stuff. I've been doing, for this year, we're doing the Italian diaspora. So the January class was Argentina and Uruguay Italian food, because that was where a lot of Italians who left Italy around the turn of the 19th century or beginning of the 20th century went to South America. This month, or next month, February, I'm doing Creole Italian, because New Orleans was the port of entry for over 60,000 Sicilians around the turn of the century who had a big impact on their cooking. So I'm doing a lot of like geeky intellectual research into where Italians went and how it changed the food that they brought from Italy. And so I'm doing that. And then I do one once a month in Coxsackie, in my little green county enclave that I love, at a place called the Lower Landing. And I'm doing a pre-Valentine thing there, all on my website. But, you know, so I get two pop-ups a month. I do cooking classes at different drummers' kitchen once a month, so that gets me out in front of the public. So, you know, I'm kind of like that musician that doesn't tour all the time, but does a few select gigs a month, which keeps me fresh. And then I'm also producing in the Ulster County Community Action has a production kitchen, so I'm in a commercial kitchen then, so I get to be around the big shiny stuff, you know?
Good. And so this is more, it's tailored a little less everyday grind. Rick Orlando is our guest. Always great to talk food with Rick, and we will do that in a moment. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Zach, the engineer, is getting as nervous as I am about the technicals going on here this afternoon. Gremlins are at work. Rick, if we lose you, you know, just call us back. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest today. We talk food. It's been a while, and it's really great to have Rick with us today. A couple of emails here, and then we'll hit the phones. This one is from Tony. Tony said, Rick, your turkey roasting technique is the best. Thank you. And why don't you tell us what that is, Rick?
You know, about when I had New World Home Cooking, we did a Thanksgiving buffet for about 500 people.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, I had to cook about 25 or 30 turkeys. And I developed a brining technique and then what we call a high and low roasting technique, where we turn the ovens up as high as they can go and put the brined turkeys in there for about 35 or 40 minutes until they were sizzling and golden brown. Then we put the ovens down very low and let them cook slowly. The recipe, if you go to my website, rickorlando.com, go to recipes, it's the most downloaded recipe I have. And so I'm so proud of that because, you know, people think, oh, you're innovative and you do all this food from around the world, but damn, I want to be able to roast the best turkey. And I get so many accolades for that technique, and I thank the caller for that because it is really the best turkey. And you know what? Turkey is such a great, delicious value protein that when you learn to roast turkey, you do it more than just on Thanksgiving, which is fun.
You know, you taught me about the right way, or the Rick Orlando way, to brine the turkey several years ago, and my wife and I, we do it every Thanksgiving now. And
well, see, that's what we hear, and that's the same recipe. I probably shared it on WAMC the first time, and then it's kind of taken on legs of its own. It gets, you know, a couple thousand downloads every November.
It's amazing. Cool. But, you know, here, I had a question for you the last time. Well, first of all, I had a turkey-related injury last Thanksgiving. I was holding, we had been brining the turkey for a long time.
Wait. Turkey-related injury?
Yeah, man. Oh, God, I was so, I hurt my back. Okay, so.
Oh, you're your back. It's your turkey.
It's a long story, but the bottom line is it took several days to recover. I was hobbling around. Anyway. We brined the turkey for about 2 days this time. Is that too long?
You know, it depends. If you really measure the amount of sodium, salt that I recommend. You can go two and a half days, even 3 days. But if you just eye it and there's a little bit too much salt in there, it won't hurt it, but it'll dry the turkey out a little bit when it cooks.
Okay, you know, we must have done it right because it was not dry. It was fantastic. All right, this email came in hours ago from Lizzie in Albany. And Lizzie writes...
Lizzie writes,
I'm really flirting with the idea of becoming a vegetarian, but I'm scared to take the leap because I love food, particularly chicken wings. I once had cauliflower chicken wings that I just loved, but I'm not sure how to replicate them. I don't have a deep fryer. Can you recommend some vegetarian recipes that might make me okay with the idea of being a vegetarian because they're so delicious? And can you offer some tips on how to make good cauliflower chicken wings at home? And that's from Lizzie in Albany.
Wow, Lizzie, that's a lot packed into one question. The Dr. Ruth of the kitchen comes in handy right now.
All right.
If you want to become a vegetarian, the secret that I suggest to people is don't become a junk food vegetarian. Don't just switch to having alternative processed proteins because you're not going to get any healthier doing that. You want to just eat lots of vegetables. You want to eat like a Mediterranean. You want to incorporate beans and grains and fresh vegetables into your diet on a regular basis and monitor it. I mean, if you're not going to be a strict vegetarian, like, for instance, my daughter was a vegan for a while, and then she got a little sick, and then it was introduced fish and chicken broths into her diet without eating meat, and now she's going to Cat's Deli and getting pastrami sandwiches, so everything evolves. But as far as making good cauliflower wings without a fryer, an air fryer works really great if you want to use it. I'm not a big fan of air fryers, but honestly, you put the cauliflower in, break it into nuggets and put a little bit of oil on it, season them with maybe one of my Cajun seasonings or something like that, but season them well and cook them in your air fryer. And if you don't have an air fryer, maybe your oven has a convection setting, because if it does, then you can turn the oven up to about 475 with the convection on. Toss them in a little oil, season them well, and blast them in the oven. What you want is you want a crispy outside and a creamy middle.
Okay.
You don't want a cauliflower wing to be raw on the inside. You want it to be tender and creamy like meat, you know?
Yeah.
So high heat cooking, maybe 15 or 20 minutes at high heat, blasting them will give you a replication without having to fry them.
We're joined today by Chef Rick Orlando, and the number here is 800-348-2551. We have some more email, but Rhea in New Paltz has been waiting quite a while. Rhea, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, Rick. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm great.
I am so excited about your new products, Richter Scale.
Thank you.
I actually do product work. I do some stuff for the food bank where we did a Feel Good. And I was introduced to the local co-packers and the kind of community we have around here in the Hudson Valley for food products like yours. I wish you the best of success and love the name.
Yeah.
The name is off the hook good.
Oh, that's nice.
Good. My wife called me Darren Stevens of food, if you remember who Darren Stevens
was. Oh, sure. Yeah, Bewitched. Yeah. Well, Rhea, thanks so much for the call. Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. This email from Barbara. Barbara says, hey, spices, where do you get them? I grow some but need cumin. Thanks. That's Barbara.
Where do you get cumin?
Yeah.
Well, you can get cumin.
Where do you get yours, I believe, is the question.
Where do I get mine?
Well, where would Rick Orlando go?
I buy a lot of stuff from a company in Massachusetts called Atlantic Spice.
Ah.
I used to use Frontier Spice, and Atlantic Spice is based in on the Cape, but they have all non-irradiated and mostly fair trade spices in one-pound bags. So, I buy lots of them.
Yeah.
You get them from them. If you're in the Albany area, Penzies is a good spot to go. But if you need to get bulk... and the other place you can get inexpensive spices reliably is at any of the Indian stores. I happen to like Parivar on Central Avenue because they're sweet and friendly there, and you can get them, inexpensively. But if you want something that, you know is going to be clean and, I'm sure the Honest Way Co-op,
sure,
and a lot of places like that carry them as well.
You know, you mentioned irradiated spice. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, it is, because... Sort of how they use a lot of preservatives on wheat before it goes into bread. With spices, unless they're 100% completely dehydrated of all moisture, they will mold up when they pack them in these basically silos, not quite silos, but big canisters before they go to packaging facilities. So a lot of the big companies irradiate them to make sure there's no bacteria on them.
Ah, okay. And let's go back to the phone. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Tatiana in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi.
Rick, I wanted to know how come you won the competition for the best potato latkes?
Rick is stumped.
Hello,
Rick. Did you get that? Did we lose Rick again? Hello, Rick. Are you there? We lost Rick. Tatiana, I want you to hang on. What we will do is try to get Rick back on the line, and he can answer your question. That's a good question. Do you make latkes, Tatiana?
Oh my God, I am totally infatuated by latkes.
And
eat them off season.
Okay. And what's your recipe? While we're waiting for Rick to come back here.
Well, my recipe is, it comes about very good, and one of the secrets is peanut oil for frying. I do them either with red bliss potatoes or Yukon Gold, or I mix them, depending. I always try to reinvent myself around the Hanukkah season. Mm-hmm. And the secret, I would say, is squeezing them hard before frying them. That means to get them as dry as possible and to...
Hang on.
Hello?
Hang on just a sec.
Okay,
you said squeezing them hard. Got that. And
yes, and marinate the onions. I do the sweet onions in the latkes. So I marinate them in salt and squeeze them hard as well.
Very interesting indeed. Now, you know, here's a question. My wife was making...
I'm here, Ray.
Oh, Rick, I don't even see you on the line. Where are you, sir?
I called in on a line. You know, it's a little conspiracy theory here. You guys keep dubbing me. What's going on?
Hey, man, you know, we really do like you. And we were just talking to Tatiana about her potato latkes, and she tries to reinvent herself every Hanukkah season. And she uses either Yukon Gold or the red potatoes. And she says the trick is, in fact, to really squeeze those suckers and get as much moisture out as possible. Rick, I'll let you take it up with Tatiana now.
Hi, Tatiana. Well, I don't know if you've seen my video or seen the Beat Bobby Flay episode, but I do exactly the opposite. I barely squeeze them at all. But I would never use a red potato because... They're very hard to get crisp. I want a starchy potato, either an Eastern white potato or a russet potato, because the starchier, the higher starch level, lower water level makes a crispier latke. But I like a creamy middle and a crispy exterior. You should check out my video on my YouTube channel because it's very different. But I make my mix, potato, onion, I put a little bit of fresh horseradish in it just for tingle, salt, pepper, egg. And since I have a gluten-free experience in my house here, I've been making them with potato starch instead of using matzo meal. But you can use matzo meal or even flour if you're not practicing kosher at the time. And, I toss them around a little bit and squeeze them just a little. But I start them a little thicker and let them get brown on the outside, and then I squeeze them. But they're really good. I mean, they come out really different, really crispy, really creamy in the middle. But I've had a hard time. I mean, good luck with the red potatoes. I've had a very difficult time getting red potatoes to get crispy. I see people do zucchini latkes. You just can't get that stuff crispy. It's, unless you put more flour in it than potato. Do yours actually get crispy with the red potatoes?
Well, you know, medium crispy, but I don't like them moist inside. I like the feeling of the oil going through the potato, and that's why I squeeze them hard before I fry them. And it is
everybody has their own way, you know.
The onion that's marinated that creates the softness inside of them. The sweet onion is different from the Spanish onion.
So you marinate Spanish onions. That, I've not heard that. Rick, how about you?
Well, yeah. I mean, often when I use onions for salad or for salsa, I'll put them in a bowl and put some citrus or some vinegar or even just some water and salt on them to cool them down a little bit, to take the burn away from them.
No,
you know?
I mean in latkes. That's what I meant. Have you heard
that? No, I don't marinate in latkes. I grate them right in with the potatoes.
That's very interesting.
I put them right through the grind. And the other thing when I make my latkes is I do two different textures of potatoes. I do about 75% of them on the regular box grater, and the rest I use my mandolin and make them into thin julienne strips. So there's a little ribbony, crispy texture throughout the latke as well.
Does that help
at
all?
Mine are a little offbeat, but apparently they're good.
Tatiana,
somebody said they're good. We sold a million of them at the restaurant, too. Boy, those latke Benedicts were quite popular.
Ooh,
poached eggs on latkes.
Delicious.
Thank you. I'll try that.
Hey, I have one question for you, Tatiana, before you go.
Yes.
It's a philosophical question. Now, over the weekend, my wife was making her famous chicken noodle soup. And and I said, well, can you tell me about the recipe? And she said, no. My mother kept it secret. Her mother kept they come of Polish stock, and they said that you don't ask for the recipes. In your household, is the recipe a secret thing?
No.
No?
I tell everybody how I do it, and I always experiment with different options. The chicken soup is very much liked the way I make it, and it's not necessarily the general idea, but I put bay leaf is extremely important, and all the others, cloves and allspice, and sometimes pepper, fresh pepper, and a little cinnamon, and a lot of vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
And then I take out the vegetables, and at the end, I put carrots so they don't get overcooked. Hmm. And add the, the parsley. So it looks nice and colorful.
What's great about chicken soup is that every culture has a chicken soup, and there are probably 1,000 ways to make chicken soup, which is so much fun. Because I just made chicken soup this morning, and I made a little Italian grandmother style, which is heavy on the potatoes.
Chicken soup is good, too.
I
make all kinds of chicken soup. It's so much fun, and it's such a healthy, delicious thing to eat.
Tatiana, I got to say, I got to have you back on the show by yourself, because on the time when Rick was gone, you were a great guest, and thank you so much. Have a lovely weekend. We appreciate it. The number here is 800-348-2551. Now, Rick, don't go anywhere, because we're going to go to another call now, okay?
I'm here. Don't hang up on me.
All right, you're scaring me. Any pause, and I'm afraid you're gone. Travis in Kingston, you're on.
I think we need to...
Go ahead, Travis.
Ray, how you doing?
Hey, good.
Hey, by the way, Rick, I got married to New World Home Cooking back in 2014. It was great. Appreciate it. We missed the place.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss it sometimes.
I'm married, too. That's another good thing.
Good. Good for you.
Still
married?
I'm here. We are still married. So that's good, too. I'm like a smooth-brained 8-person in the kitchen, so I apologize in advance if my question is very basic. But convection ovens are all the rage these days, so I went out and bought a really expensive one from Lowe's, and I just wanted to ask, where do convection ovens shine, as in... what are the do's and don'ts? What do you recommend cooking in them? What is better as far as just sticking with conventional heat versus convection?
That's a good question. So basically, a convection oven circulates the air. And so convection ovens are great for crisping and browning, like the roast chicken, like the, you know, roasted root vegetables that you want to get some caramelization on. There are times when I have a combo oven, the same thing, convection and regular. And sometimes if I'm doing something like a leg of lamb, I'll roast it on conventional until it's just about done. Then I'll switch it to convection and crank it up to crisp up the outside. But definitely that's what it's going to do. It's going to create more crispiness. It's always a little higher. You know, the cookbooks used to have a lot of concordance. I don't know how much they do that. But in the old days, it would always tell you, if you're using your convection oven while following a recipe, go about 25 to 30 degrees cooler because it'll run hotter because the air is moving. Yeah.
All right, Travis.
That's all. It's great for roasting the chicken. You know, and the good thing about the convection oven is you can crank it up, too. I mean, sometimes I crank mine up, as we were talking earlier, and just blast something pretty quickly, like chicken wings, for instance, and they'll taste almost like they're fried because you get so much coloring on them.
Chef Rick Orlando joins us. We have to take a quick break here. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Chef Rick Orlando joins us today. I'm Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Chef Rick, 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Rick, this one is from Tim in Ulster County. Tim says, ribs are on sale this week at Rick's local grocery store that begins with an A. Any tips for ribs is in this cold why not barbecue left? LOL is what he said.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I have, first of all, go to my website and get yourself a jar of, or go to one of my local stores and get a jar of my Q-Rub, my barbecue rub seasoning, because that is killer on ribs. But, you know, that little brining recipe that I put up for turkey?
Yeah.
That is perfect for ribs. I find that if you brine your ribs, they'll never dry out. And then if you're going to do them outside, I have a gas grill. I have a charcoal grill. I have a gas grill. I have smokers. I have all the toys. But on a regular gas grill, which is easy to use in the winter, I put the ribs to one side of the grill, not over the direct heat. Usually, you have a couple of different heat elements, and I brine them. I season them up. I rub them up with the barbecue rub, and I close the lid and cook them over medium slow heat for about 40 minutes to an hour, turning them occasionally.
Yeah.
And then I turn the grill up. If I'm going to use some sauce, I'll mop them. I like that word, mop them, baste them with the sauce at that point, and crisp up the exterior. But slow and low, and then crisp them up at the end. But brining is really important. What brining does, it uses the, one of my favorite scientific terms is osmosis, right?
Right.
So when the protein is sitting in the brine, it drinks up the brine liquid and expel some of its own liquid so that when it cooks, it actually helps kind of steam it from the inside out, and it brings the flavor all the way to the bone. And that's what you want. When you're eating a rib and it's seasoned and it's a little salty and a little sweet all the way to the bone, then you eat more than you're supposed to, which we like.
Right now, you know, with your grilling at home, how cold is too cold for you to be out there? We got a London broil. I was going to do it outside, and then I realized, oh, my God, it's going to be about 4 degrees tomorrow. So we may try it in the pan. But, I mean, how cold can it be for Rick Orlando to go out and throw something on the grill?
Well, you know what, Ray? I'm with you. I mean, I like to cook outside, but there's a, you know, common sense. When it's 4 degrees out, the problem is you're not going to be able to get your grill hot. It's really difficult to get your temperature in a grill if it's that cold outside. You're going to have to run the thing for an hour before you even get to the temperature that you need to cook. So probably not a good idea when it's under 20 or under 18 to think that you can properly cook outside because the cold air is everywhere.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I use charcoal, and the charcoal gets very hot. You leave it for 30, 40 minutes, it's 500 degrees.
Yeah, but the air above it is below freezing, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So it definitely does some odd, it can do some odd things to protein. I mean, I have a hybrid grill, you know, the charcoal, and when you close the lid, it's going to cook great, you know, and you can do it that way. But when the lid's open and that cold air is hitting the meat, it's going to be really hard to get really a good cook for me. I'm sure I get calls saying I do it all the time, and that's good because everyone should tell me what they're doing because that's what I want to hear. I want to hear your stories. But, you know, for me, once it's below like 20, I don't bother.
Yeah,
I stay in and look outside.
I'll skip it as well. Another steak question. This one came in from Forrest in Great Barrington. Any good recipes for chuck steak? This is usually my go-to for beef stew and carne asada, but I'd be curious if there are any other good recipes.
I happen to think that chuck has the most flavor of any part of the cow, by far. And I like chuck steaks. I like, and you can get, they've begun marketing chuck into primals. They have something called a flat iron steak, which is taken from the chuck. And then there's also the Terrace Major, they call chuck filet, which is like a leaner part of the chuck. But chuck has, you know, different grains, different flavors. I like the good old-fashioned big ones they cut at the butcher shop that have the bone in them. They're so delicious. No, just season it well and crust the outside. The thing about a chuck, because it's a braising cut, it's got a ton of flavor. And if, even if you like your steak really rare, you want to cook it medium rare to medium. You want to get it past that really shiny blue stage. Even if you like your regular filet mignon blue, cook your chuck a little more. That'll help it break down a bit when you eat it. It sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. We used to cook short rib steaks at the restaurant a lot, and people couldn't believe the depth of flavor. But we cooked them all like pink, like medium rib, 130, 132 degrees.
Yeah.
The other thing is marinate them. I like to use, for me, I use chimichurri a lot. I make a basic, simple chimichurri, which recipes on my website. And, you know, get those recipes now because when my cookbook comes out, they're all coming down.
When is your when is your cookbook coming out? You talked about this years ago.
Probably not to the fall.
Yeah.
Probably not to the fall. I've got it all organized. I just got to get it together, but probably not to the fall. But, you know, the recipes, I'm just teasing. The recipes will be on the website.
All right. This
but anyway, a good marinade. You know, you can do like a basic red wine, peppercorn, shallot marinade. But I like chimichurri because chimichurri has got acid and herb and a little oil. And then grill it or broil it hot or even just get a big cast iron skillet rolling really hard and you know, cook it right in the cast iron skillet. It comes out great. Chuck is delicious. It's affordable. It also is a good sustainability concept if you're thinking about, you know, using the whole animal, as they say, avoiding the going. If everyone in the world just wants filet mignon and ribeye, well, there's only two filet mignons and two ribeyes on every cow, so start eating the other parts is what I say.
Rick Orlando is our guest today on this Food Friday. 800-348-2551, the number. One more email and then back to the phones. This one's from John, and we'll change gears here. This is vegan spicy cheese. Rick, I've chosen to remove all animal-based foods, going completely plant-based, having found amazing alternatives like Impossible Burger, delicious ways to spice hot tempeh and tofu, but I cannot find any reasonable replacement for truly staggering, flame-erupting cheese. Do you make or know where or how we can find plant-based nuclear cheese? I like the way this guy writes. Plant-based nuclear cheese, something tasting full of love and flavor. By the way, I used to live in China and Indonesia, hence the need for Krakatoa flavor, and that's from John. Well done, John.
Hiya, John. Well, you know, one of the things you can do, there are some pretty good plant-based cheeses out there that you can buy in, like, you know, the co-op or the health food store, and you can add your own chili to it. There's also a cool little company in the Hudson Valley called Treeline, and they make a pretty good chipotle serrano pepper cheese. Just go to Treeline Cheese online. I've done some work with these guys in the past, but they have a nice non-GMO
plant-based French-style cheese, kind of a soft cheese, but they put chipotle chili and serrano pepper. It's got a nice kick to it. But then again, that's where that little pouch of ghost pepper powder comes in, because you can just sprinkle it onto the cheese as it's melting, or you can buy the grated daiya or something like that and just add chopped jalapenos or chopped serranos if you want to really kick up the pepper jack kind of experience.
Rick Orlando is our guest. And back to the phones we go, 800-348-2551. Lenny is in Woodstock. Lenny, you're on.
Hey, Lenny.
Hello, Lenny.
Hey, is that Rick?
Lenny's in Woodstock.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going on?
Wow, no 7-second delay. This is cool.
All right. Well, don't worry. There is one, so don't swear.
That's the radio off.
Okay. Okay, Rick, first of all, I know when I share this with you, I share it with a lot of folks from the Woodstock area, but every time you drive down and pass the old place, the old New World, I have a audible sigh. Oh. It's like, man, I miss this place. And with that in mind, Woodstock is going through another, I guess, revolution or evolution of new restaurants, of different places to eat. And as we come out of this pandemic healthy and happy, like where I know we're all going to be, can you see, if you could wave your magic Rick wand, what type of cuisine could you see Woodstock supporting?
Well, that's a really good question. I feel as though the Hudson Valley is, it's funny, the Capital Region is very lacking, not that there's none, but lacking in great, like, mom-and-pop ethnic Mexican and Latin food, and we have a lot of that in the Hudson Valley, and the Hudson Valley, Woodstock area, I think, is lacking in good South Asian food, Vietnamese, Thai, Burmese, Laotian, Cambodian. You don't see, there's not very much of that. And I would love to see a restaurant like that. I thought about doing it myself in a spot in Kingston, but then I realized that, you know, now is not the time to open a restaurant. Power to everybody who's doing it, because they're probably getting great rents and great deals because the spaces are there. But yeah, I think a South Asian restaurant would be the bomb right now.
I love it. And then that would get you back with the big pots and pans again in the kitchen 6 days a week, like I know you really want to do.
Hey, I don't know if you can tell, but Lenny is also a radio guy. He's got that voice.
You betcha. He sure does. You know, I got to tell you, that's your breaking news here in saying that I was thinking about having a new restaurant. This tells me that maybe Chef Rick goes back into the business one of these years, huh?
No. It's going to take a big lure.
Really? Well, you just hold out for
you never
bigger
know,
money.
Right? I'm only a kid. I've got plenty of years left. You never know.
Oh, that's right. MJ. Go ahead, Rick.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, let's go to MJ in Pittsfield. MJ, you're on.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, MJ. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about the air fryer. You had mentioned something about an air fryer earlier in the show. And I am finding that if I follow the instructions and the little manual that came with it, like my food's getting way too cooked. And I'm talking about roasting vegetables predominantly.
Yeah. Well, then you know, every cooking device has its own quirks, right? I mean, like when you work in a professional kitchen or a home kitchen, you have to adapt to your cooking apparatus. So maybe you lower the heat, maybe you do less time, maybe you cut your vegetables a little bigger when you put them in. What kind of air fryer do you have?
I have a Ninja.
Yeah, I've never tried one of those. I have a Cuisinart one. Yeah, I mean, without specifics, but I would say that if things are getting too cooked, they're either cooking too hot, too long, or they're cut too small.
Okay, I think cut too small is probably a part of the problem because, a whole bag. Brussels sprouts only take about 10 of them and cook them. But, okay, well, that's a good tip. So I thank you very much, and good luck with any future endeavors you may have.
I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere. You'll find me. I'm here for good. So thanks.
MJ, thank you for the call. It's Rick Orlando today on Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. Well, Rick, you've done a heck of a nice job navigating the technical issues on the program today. Not quite the same as having you here in the studio, partially because you didn't
without having the aroma of the effluvium of my food in the studio. Yeah. So this is kind of like toboggan riding with the when your scarf kind of goes over your eyes while you're going down the hill.
Yeah,
that's what it felt like.
Well, that's an apt description of my entire career. Toboggan ride downhill. Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I got a question for you. Can you use green tea to cook pancakes and other food?
Can you use green tea to cook pancakes?
You can use green tea powder, matcha, all the time in any type of fritter or something like that. Small amounts, you add it in, you know, to taste. Can you use the actual liquid green tea? You can sub green tea anywhere that calls for water if you want to get the Are you just trying to get green tea in your system, or do you like the flavor?
I like the flavor and the herbs.
Yeah, so then, probably want to get a powder, like a matcha powder or a green tea powder, and, start out lightly because it can be really powerful and almost give you like a bitter tannic flavor if you use too much of it. But you put a little matcha powder, you can make green pancakes. I've made other
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Can I ask you another question?
Why not?
Do they have decaf matcha, too?
Decaf matcha.
I believe they do. I know they have decaf green tea, so I don't see why they wouldn't have decaf matcha. Nice thing about doing this from home, Ray, is I'm sitting here looking at my computer and I'm Googling. Yes, there's tons of decaf matcha out there.
I'll be darned. Hey, Chris, I have a question for you. Now, you call, and many times you bring up green tea. What is it about green tea that intrigues you so?
Well, I like it because I read a lot about it. It has a lot of antioxidants in it, and it has a lot of EKG in it. And it's very good for your health and stuff like that. And I get a lot of it because they say it's good for the immune system.
Are you healthy?
I have a little. I have a little problem.
With
it. I like it.
Go ahead, Rick.
It makes me a little jumpy more than coffee. I don't know what it is about it. More than black tea too. If I drink too much green tea, I get really kind of speedy. I don't feel good.
Well, Chris sounds pretty relaxed. Thank you for the call, Chris. We appreciate it very much, and good job. And Rick Orlando, how do people find out about your comings and goings?
Very simple. My name is Rick Orlando without a K. Start at rickorlando.com, and everything goes from there. There's a website, and it has tabs for everything from my store locator and my shop to my recipes to my cooking videos to my pop-ups and classes to experiential travel, which we are still working on. I was on the phone with some people. Hopefully by next fall or winter, we're going to try to go back to Sicily and southern Italy. I'm there. I'm rickorlando.com. It's all in one place.
Doesn't it excite you to think about going to a place and not having a mask on someday?
Yeah, although I have to tell you, when I walked this dog this morning, I was really happy to have a mask on.
Well, you know what? There is a thermal property that, yeah, we're starting to see the light there. Hey, man, thank you so much for being here. RickOrlando.com is the website, and that's Rick with no K. And always great to talk to you, buddy.
Thank you, Ray. Have a good time, old-timer. I'll see you.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, celebrating Valentine's Day with chocolate-dipped strawberries and chocolate long-stem roses, Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville, UncleSamsCandy.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing products from classic to new labels, SpiritHAUS.com. At Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York, serving Albany since 1982, now open Wednesday through Sunday for dinner, working to provide a safe experience for their patrons, CafeCapriccio.com. Once again, thanks to Rick Orlando for being here today and for bearing with us as the Gremlins made all kinds of mischief today on the program. Zach Malloy, our long-suffering engineer. My God, Zach, it's only a few hours from Miller time. Barb King took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again for being here. On Monday, 2 p.m., it's a medical Monday. We'll welcome Dr. Stephen Alsdorf, a family medicine physician at Community Health Programs in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Have a lovely, safe weekend. Wear the mask. It'll keep you warm. and we'll see you on Monday. Stand by now for the best of our knowledge.